Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams, columnist and two-time author from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Not to be confused with the former president, John Adams, the KNS veteran columnist, John Adams. John, welcome back from the holiday break. You really didn't have much of a break. I did. You were just head down working this whole time.
Yeah, I really was, and I feel pretty good about that. I hope your trip went okay. I know you did some traveling.
Yeah, made it back in one piece, and made it back to still uncertainty for Tennessee's football coaching. Jeremy Pruitt, 2.5 weeks after the season ended, is still twisting in the wind. But we'll get to that in a moment, John. I first want to touch on a couple news developments here as we record this. On a Tuesday afternoon, it was kind of a newsy morning. Early this morning, Bryce Thompson declared for the NFL draft, saying he'll forego his senior season and test the NFL draft waters. And then Ty Chandler, veteran running back, became the latest player to enter the transfer portal for the Vols. So, John, your reaction to those two developments?
Not really that surprising. Bryce Thompson had a pretty good year. I don't consider him an elite cornerback. He's no Patrick Surtain. I don't know where he might fall in the NFL draft. You may know better than I. Could he make the third round, do you think?
No, I think he's probably a late round guy, probably a five to seven round guy.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Ty Chandler is more interesting to me. I think Bryce Thompson probably, I don't know how much better he would have gotten. I did think he improved from last season to this season. But Ty Chandler is a guy I really thought was going to be a pretty good running back here. Maybe he's been pretty good. Maybe I thought he would be bigger than that, more than a pretty good running back. He had speed. He showed toughness at times. He just didn't progress much the last year and this year, I didn't think. And Eric Gray surpassed him. There's no question about that. At the end of the freshman year, Eric Gray's freshman year, he surpassed him, and that probably was a blow to his ego, and maybe he wants to go somewhere where he'll be the featured back. I'm sure he can find some place out there. Probably won't be in the SEC, but I think it hurts Tennessee some because you can't get enough running backs in this league, and he's a veteran player, so I think there is a lot, but I don't consider it a major blow to the offense.
Yeah, it's interesting because Ty Chandler's a 2,000-yard career rusher, but I consider Bryce Thompson to be the bigger loss of these two because you look at Tennessee's defense, and I didn't think they had, well, I don't know if they had any standout performers this past season, but I did think Thompson was their best player overall on defense. And I look at that secondary, and I see very few answers for the 2021 season for Tennessee. I mean, you got a veteran, Alante Taylor, at cornerback. He's serviceable. He's not a great player, but he's a serviceable SEC starter, I think. But overall, and Jalen McCullough and Trayvon Flowers will be back at safeties, but McCullough especially, I thought, struggled this year. And now they're losing their best defensive back in Thompson, and they brought in just a couple of three-star signees. I know Keyshawn Lawrence was their top-rated signee from last year as a cornerback. He'll be back next year. Maybe he steps into more playing time. But I think the Thompson loss is certainly notable for a defense that, like I said, is really lacking star power.
Yeah, I agree with that. The secondary had way too many breakdowns. It seems like a secondary breakdown and a big pass play from the opposition, I thought, was a key factor in Tennessee's struggles this year. Just happened in a lot of games. And those quick, seemingly easy touchdowns don't do a whole lot for morale either. You just never felt real secure with those guys guarding your far end. I think now you're losing your best guy. I don't see the secondary being better next year. I think we'll go into 2021 saying secondary is a problem area, a major problem area.
I don't see, we can take it one step further. I don't see this defense being better next year, really. I mean, I think I have more belief that the offense can improve than the defense, just because the off, I mean, both units were really so bad in 2020. But if Tennessee can get better at quarterback, which I'm not convinced that they will, but I think it's possible they will, then I think the offense can be better next season. And with some of those young wide receivers, you know, another year in the system. But I don't see anything to make me believe that this defense is going to be better next year.
When you look at offense and defense, you look at the stats, you would say the defense is significantly better when you just look at the stats. But there were other things. The defense, like we already alluded to, gave up too many plays, and it didn't deliver many big plays. I was thinking about Kentucky's defense. I mean, it was a pretty good defense, but it also it beat Tennessee by making key plays in the secondary, interceptions. Go back to the Auburn game when Smoke Mundy took the ball on an interception 100 yards for a touchdown. The impact those kind of plays had by the opposition, Tennessee just didn't get many of those. So this was a, at its very best, it was just kind of a non-effectual defense. It just didn't make anything good happen. Made some bad things happen, but there was nothing to balance that with.
Going further on that defense, John, you look at the transfer portal, and there's a ton of Vols players that have departed and headed for the portal. I don't think it's quite as catastrophic as some. I think there is some feeling out there that, like, oh my goodness, the sky is falling. Look at all these players in the transfer portal. Well, that could be an issue if it was a bunch of good players heading for the portal, but Tennessee didn't have a bunch of good players last year. So to a certain extent, I don't know how much it matters that, you know, one scrub player is heading for the portal and might be replaced by another scrub player coming in. But there are a few notable losses in there. And I look at defense especially. You look at Thompson is not in the portal, but he's departing for the NFL draft. DeAndre Johnson was Tennessee's best pass rusher throughout the season. He transferred to Miami. And then if not Johnson, then the best pass rusher was Kevon Bennett until he was kicked off the team, and he's then in the transfer portal. So I would say, you know, Henry Toa belongs in that conversation among Tennessee's top defensive talent. I know he didn't have a great season, but I think we both believe he's a talented guy. Really, I think those are the four maybe most talented players on Tennessee's defense, and Thompson, Toa, Kevon Bennett, and DeAndre Johnson, and three of the four are gone. And so again, I think to me, I have a hard time seeing Tennessee's defense taking a step forward next year when you look at what they had this year and combine that with losing three significant starters.
You really need something to be very good. If you have as many weaknesses as Tennessee seems to have on both sides of the ball, there's nothing to really hang your hat on, nothing to make up for what's going wrong. It's not like you'll go into a game and think, well, the defense is pretty ordinary, doesn't make any many big plays, doesn't give you a big pass rush, no ball hawkers in the secondary, but maybe we'll just outscore folks. Well, no, they can't say that because they're probably not going to outscore. If they can hold somebody in the 20s, maybe. It's not a dynamic offense, and it doesn't look dynamic for next year. When we're talking about this, it's a little off topic. How much would that bother you if let's assume that Jeremy Pruitt is fired? I can't believe anything else would happen with him. Let's assume he's fired. I mean, for hiring a new coach, how much would that bother you when you look at this, the team returning?
Well, I'm going to use that as a useful segue, John. That's not off topic at all. It becomes a great segue because I want to steer this into a conversation about Jeremy Pruitt's future and what might happen if Tennessee decides to make a change. And we've gone over some of the newsy developments on Tuesday. On Monday, though, University released a statement confirming that it has retained outside counsel to assist in the ongoing investigation into whether the football program has committed NCAA violations, particularly regarding recruiting violations or impermissible benefits. And this outside counsel, who it is notable. One of the two lawyers that Tennessee has retained is Mike Glazier. He's got about 35 years in this line of work. He represents universities during investigations where they might come under NCAA scrutiny, might face penalties. and it's his job to represent the university's interests. Now, sometimes that coincides with representing coaches' interests as well, and sometimes it doesn't. You know, he's working for the university here, and he's not working for Jeremy Pruitt. And so, you know, he will work alongside the university in this investigation, and typically Mike Glazier's goal is to minimize the NCAA damage, to minimize the penalties, to protect the reputation of the university and its athletic department. And, you know, I think this is a noteworthy development, John, because for a couple weeks now, I think we've felt like there was something to this investigation and that they weren't, you know, investigating a paperwork error or some sort of clerical error, you know, and that there was something more to this. We see every year football programs commit, you know, they self-report minor violations. It happens every year. It happens at Tennessee, happens elsewhere. But this has always felt like there was a little bit, there was something more than that, but we didn't know how much more. To me, the fact that Tennessee has retained Mike Glazier in a counterpart from his firm signifies that this investigation is something. There could be something to this. And I think it's the latest blow for Jeremy Pruitt's already tenuous future at Tennessee.
Yeah, announcing, or not really announcing, but word coming out that Tennessee had in fact hired Mike Glazier, that's akin to parking an ambulance out in front of the athletic complex, a siren on, light flashing. I mean, he doesn't handle parking tickets or
right.
speeding or speeding violations. This is a very serious matter, and we thought that all along, and I thought you the way you broke it down is significant because you emphasize that he's there for Tennessee's best interest. He's not there for Jeremy Pruitt's best interest.
No, he's not Jeremy Pruitt's attorney. He's the university's attorney.
No, those guys aren't sharing an attorney. He might need his own, but I think what Tennessee now, and we've talked about this before, I mean, it's just – it makes sense. You're guilty of violations on his watch. He didn't do anything specifically, but things were going on in his program. We're hypothesizing now, but so you say, hey, we could fire you for cause, and that's when he brings his lawyer and who says you're not firing us for cause, and then you say, well, let's talk about this. And you come to a negotiated settlement. Tennessee would owe him over $12 million right now, almost $13 million. Maybe they can negotiate that down to $5 million. I guess it depends on the evidence, but that's in best. It's clearly in Tennessee's best interest to move on from Jeremy Pruitt. I don't see how anybody could argue that.
Okay, so Glazier's involved in the investigation, John, but that could be the case whether Tennessee wanted to try to force Jeremy Pruitt out or not. Even if Tennessee was really wanting to keep Jeremy Pruitt, it could have Glazier be involved. He's involved in representing yes. a lot of universities when they want to keep the coach. They want him to help the university, but part of helping the university is helping the coach. And so his inclusion doesn't automatically say to me that Tennessee, this is a power move to try to get Jeremy Pruitt out of there with no buyout or reduced buyout, but that could be an outcome. So which do you see this as being kind of a move by the chancellor, maybe others, to say, let's use all of our resources that we can obtain here, including Mike Glazier, to build a case to whittle down Jeremy Pruitt's buyout? Or do you see this more as the university saying, hey, there could be some serious allegations, violations here. We're going to do our due diligence in retaining competent counsel to see what's there.
Yes, we don't know how much has been revealed in this investigation or how much is yet still to be revealed in it. So I think you hire Michael Glazier, that's a sign that there are serious issues. And whether you want to get rid of Jeremy Pruitt or wanting to coach Tennessee football for the next 25 years, it behooves you to bring in Michael Glazier. I think it's a combination. Also, a lot of times, even if a school doesn't want to lose its football coach, the coach isn't 16 and 19 after 3 years. Maybe he's got, you know, he's 6 or 7 games over 500. but it often helps you with the NCAA when you sacrifice, when you show, hey, we feel like this guy was responsible for some of this, and to show how sincere we are about running a clean program, we are going to sacrifice our football coach, because although he's been somewhat successful on the field, he's not what we want at a program. We want our program to be pristine. We want it to be a model for other programs in terms of adhering to the NCAA rules. And so we're gonna get rid of our football coach, and the NCAA will pat you on the back and say, good boy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, John. I could see Pruitt continuing to twist in the wind for another 10 days or so. I don't, you know, the clock's ticking, but I wouldn't be stunned if it takes another week or so to reach a resolution here, whether that be the university says, hey, we're staying the course with Pruitt, or it's time to make a change.
Yeah, you can't say, it's not one of these coach hell hostage situations. It's coach in limbo situation, day whatever. Do we count his COVID quarantine as part of the limbo?
I think so.
Okay, well then I'd say, what are we? I mean, could we be up to like a 15-day coach in limbo?
I think it's past that. Yeah, okay. The season ended on December 19th. And I really go back to after the Vanderbilt game. You know, there was some belief that as long as Pruitt beat Vanderbilt, he'd be fine for next season. So he beat Vanderbilt and there wasn't a peep coming out of the university. So I run it back all the way to December 12th after he beat Vanderbilt, and mum's been the word since then. Now, Philip Fulmer did imply in a bowl game press release, of course, the bowl game was Tennessee then dropped out, that Pruitt would be back for spring practice in 2021. But I don't think anyone believes that this is going to be Philip Fulmer's ultimate call. I mean, he's not involved in the investigation, really. So, you know, I don't think it's going to come down to what Philip Fulmer wants in terms of who's coaching Tennessee football in 2021.
So I think we could say probably coach in limbo 3 weeks. Let's say coach in limbo 21 days. That's fair.
Okay. All right.
So the program has basically been on hold for 21 days. Who would Tennessee want to hire as an O-line coach? We're not doing anything with that.
Right. Yeah. I think the question is, can they hire an O-line coach while they decide what happens to Pruitt? I mean, are you going to let him sign assistant coaches to 2-year contracts only to fire him a week later and then fire that staff and pay him 23 and a half months worth of buyouts? I mean, even Jimmy Brumbaugh worked longer than 2 weeks before he got canned.
I know that sounds far-fetched, but remember, Philip Fulmer's the AD. And Philip Fulmer negotiated a raise for himself. He got a retention bonus, and he gave Jeremy Pruitt a $400,000 raise. So would it really be that odd if Philip Fulmer said, hey, Jeremy, why don't you go hire you a D-line coach and an O-line coach? Give them a 3-year contract, pay whatever you need to get them if those are your guys, and roll with it.
You're right. I mean, I described it as, I think to my text group earlier this week, as hiring assistants only to fire the head coach a couple weeks later would be incredibly foolish. But I said, well, that's just kind of par for the course for Tennessee's athletic department the last few years.
Well, maybe Philip Fulmer puts it this way. Look, Jeremy, you hire you a D-line coach, I'll take care of the O-line as long as need be, and we'll go from there. So really, you're only talking about one coach. Fulmer can handle the O-line. Although I will say, I think his offensive line coaching has deteriorated over the years, because he didn't help that O-line that much this season. The line was a disappointment. Nonetheless, he gives you an option. Although I don't know how that would sound to the chancellor, the president, if Philip Fulmer walked in there and said, hey, guys, here's what we're going to do. I think they would look at him as though he's insane, or as some zoo animal had just wandered into their office. I just think they might be totally dumbfounded by that, but I wouldn't put it past him.
John, we entered this podcast thinking we were going to kick around some potential names for if the Tennessee football job were to become open. We're about 20 minutes deep in this fine podcast here. You want to go ahead and do that, or you want to save that? We're just reacting on the fly now. I'm just asking you questions that we should have ironed out beforehand, I guess. But what are we going to do here? We're going to kick around some candidates, or you want to save that for a juicy follow-up edition?
I mean, you know how much prep time we had for this, pretty much our usual. I think it was I timed it at a minute and 40 seconds.
A minute and 39 of which was spent trying to figure out how to get my headphones turned on so I could actually
hear that it. That was a technical difficulty. No, I don't think it's fair to the listeners to just throw something out there and then say, well, maybe we'll get back to this later, maybe not. No, let's talk about it. Is there a time limit on this?
I don't think so. So we'll,
Cool. I got nothing else going today.
Great. We'll forge ahead, John. And this is obviously, you know, Jeremy Pruitt is still the coach. So as it stands right now, he is the head man of Tennessee football. But it's, as we said, we got the coach in limbo counter at about 21 days. So
okay. Let's make that official. So if we, from this point on, we add days so that we, okay. I think we should be consistent about that and try to be factual.
It's like those Christmas calendars. You peel off the days where we got a coach in limbo calendar. We're adding days to the, adding parchment to the calendar here.
I would write that down in my notepad, but our producer, Angela, doesn't want me using a pen or writing. She says it creates noise. I'm such a taskmaster.
Yeah, we do a lot of things our producer doesn't like, I think. John, I'm going to peel back the curtain here a little bit. Normally I don't discuss, I guess, hot board ideas before.
I thought you were getting ready to get into your personal life.
No. Yeah, we will save that for a future episode that may never happen. But so here's the deal. You know, when you know this, John, when you're a beat writer of a major college football program, you don't always wait until something happens to get yourself prepared. You get yourself prepared in case it happens. And so I and my colleague, Mike Wilson, started working on a potential Tennessee hot board, probably at least a month and a half ago. So we'd be prepared in case Tennessee's job came open. You don't want to start throwing names on the list in scramble mode. You want to be prepared in case Tennessee makes a move. And so I'm going to reveal some of the names on the hot board. It won't come, I don't know that there's any real shockers here for people. And I want to gauge your reaction to these names for Tennessee's job, which, as we said, is not open. But if Tennessee's job were to come open, would it be good hire, bad hire, or mediocre hire? And let's start at the top, the guy that's been discussed for Tennessee for months now, Hugh Freeze at Liberty. If Tennessee's job were to become open, and if Tennessee could obtain Hugh Freeze, good hire, bad hire, mediocre?
None of the above. Great hire. It's the best hire Tennessee would have made since I've been here. I'm not related to Hugh Freeze. I don't even know the man. I've interviewed him a few times, but I think he's a terrific coach, great offensive coach, really good with quarterbacks, really good at a quick turnaround. He's got everything Tennessee needs, and so there's no way Tennessee would hire him. So we can just forget him. He's too good a candidate, and he wants the job. So there's absolutely no way that Tennessee would hire Hugh Freeze. So let's just – you might as well say John Gruden.
No, we're not going down that road.
But Gruden didn't want the job, see? But Hugh Freeze did. He does want the job, but so they're not going to touch him. So
I'm going to be contrarian here. I would say that'd be a mediocre hire, not because of his coaching acumen, but maybe I just am taking the moral high road here. I think jumping into bed, no pun intended, with a coach who had a background of calling escort services while at Ole Miss would just reek of hypocrisy after Tennessee fans, politicians, donors boycotted the potential Greg Schiano hire for based on old hearsay allegations about what Schiano might or might not have known about what someone else did years ago. That would just be kind of the pinnacle of hypocrisy. And then on top of that, you have an ongoing investigation into potential NCAA rules violations. you know, Ole Miss under Hugh Freeze's watch was found to commit numerous NCAA rules violations. And so I think there's other good coaches on the market that you could get without as many skeletons in the closet as Hugh Freeze has. So I'm just going to label that one a mediocre hire. I know we really diverge on that one.
Well, I mean, we could sit here and debate this all day.
Sure, but we'll move on to the next candidate.
Okay, but I'm really opposed to what you just said. I just want to get that out there. So let's go ahead. Next guy.
Well, go ahead. You can tell me why you're opposed.
No, I mean, it's hard, you know, they're all, I could go on. I could do it for 30 minutes. I could do a solo for 30 minutes on Hugh Freeze, why you should hire him and why you're wrong in what you said. And just because somebody calls an escort service, why is that necessarily bad or reflection or reflective on their moral character? You might want a companion for dinner that evening.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, could have been going to the pasta house. Moving on to the next name, John. Tom Herman, freshly on the market. Texas said no thanks. He went 7-3 in his fourth season at Texas, but big expectations down there in Austin. Herman did not deliver up to those expectations, so Texas paid him $15 million to go away and immediately hired Steve Sarkisian, Alabama's offensive coordinator, former coach at Washington and USC. And so Tom Herman is on the market. He can be picky about a job because he's got all that buyout money, but assuming he would say yes to Tennessee if the job were to come open, we've got a new category: great hire, good hire, mediocre hire, or bad hire.
Okay, there's only one great hire to be had. Well,
okay, so we can eliminate that category now.
Okay, all right.
You're sure you're not related to Hugh Freeze, John?
No, I'm not. Tom Herman would be a good hire and a much better hire than Tennessee normally makes. I like he's offensive minded. He was an assistant on Urban Meyer's staff. He knows what a good program is supposed to look like. He's recruited big-time players as an assistant at Ohio State, as a head coach at Texas. I like all those things about him. I don't like what he did at Texas. And he seemed to have repelled a lot of the fan base there, not with his personality as much as his record. But I'm not holding that against him, okay? I don't care what his personality is. Some people say he's really arrogant. I mean, I think a lot of people think you're arrogant. But I don't, and I'm not.
Are you sure?
And even
not?
If you were, I wouldn't hold that against you. Okay.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, you're a very bright guy, and you're not afraid to let people know that, which I think is fine. Tom Herman, you have so many resources at Texas, and you had one of the best quarterbacks in Texas history on your watch in Sam Ellinger. Just didn't excel there. That would bother me a little bit. But again, it's a good hire for Tennessee. It's way better than what Tennessee normally gets. So I would be fine with Tom Herman.
Yeah, I would label Herman a good hire as well. He's won over 70% of his games in six seasons. And, you know, that wasn't enough at Texas. Of course, that's padded a little bit by he went 13-1 one year at Houston. But still, very good winning percentage, worked under Urban Meyer as his offensive coordinator, as you mentioned, has had very high-performing offenses throughout his career. Tennessee's offense has been terrible the last few seasons. I think, you know, there'd be something said for going for an offensive mind rather than defensive if this job were to open. And, you know, although he didn't look so good to Texas, I think he'd look pretty good for Tennessee because what he was doing at Texas is – well, it's an improvement on what Tennessee did in two out of the 3 years that Jeremy Pruitt's been on the job. So I would call this a good hire. And at 45 years old, you know, I still think there's could be a really promising career ahead of Tom Herman yet. And, you know, Texas might, I don't know if they'll regret this one, but I think they could regret it, John. I think
I think they regret letting Mac Brown go. Texas is a... Yeah, like I said, I'm not holding the Texas situation against him. And one thing else I will say about him, in big games, he was competitive. He didn't win enough of them. But for Tennessee, that would be a huge step upwards. I mean, he gave that great LSU team a lot of trouble in 2019. He's played Oklahoma tough at times with really good Oklahoma teams. So I also think he would have a chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove he really is the smartest guy in the room. And Texas didn't know what it was doing when it let him go. And he's going to show people. I always like that. I like big ego coaches who have something they want to prove. And I think he would have that. So I like him.
Feels like we're at the point in that podcast, John, where I should say we'll be right back. I think we've blown past that point in the podcast, but we need a new sponsor for this podcast. So if you're interested, reach out, and maybe we'll let you sponsor this fine podcast. But we'll keep rolling here without the commercial break and move along to Gus Malzahn, fired Auburn coach. Another guy who won not quite 70% of his games, but he won 2/3 of his games at Auburn. Not good enough for Auburn. Could that be good enough for Tennessee, though? This is a guy that beat Nick Saban 3 times during his Auburn tenure. He's the only... No coach has beaten Nick Saban more than 3 times in the SEC since Saban has been at Alabama. What do you think about Gus Malzahn for Tennessee?
I think he would be another good hire. And weighing him against Herman, I would actually take him, Gus Malzahn. He's competed in the toughest division in college football. My gosh, if you can win, if your overall record's around 65% at a school and you're competing in the West, you got to play every one of those West teams every year. For him to come into the East, to him, that has to look like, wow. You know, I've moved to the American Conference. I've been, you know, Conference USA now. This, I can win a bunch of games here. I like it how well he's done against the best teams. He's had some great wins. I think he's recruited pretty well. What concerns me the most about him, this was an offensive, very innovative offensive guy. When he became head coach in 2013, he wrote a book on offense. He was at the vanguard of the up-tempo spread offense, almost won the national championship, lost it in the final seconds to Florida State in 13. His offense doesn't look like that anymore. It's always kind of stuck in the same place, and he hasn't evolved. You know, we talk about great. What makes a great coach? Well, Nick Saban. Always evolving. Bear Bryant was that way, constantly changing with as the game changed. And another way to look at that, though, with Gus is maybe he would be reinvigorated by a coaching change. And I think he would have this in common with Tom Herman. I want to show people that I really am a good coach and that I can win a championship. I don't know if he would want the Tennessee job right now. He's getting, what, $21 million?
Correct. He needs to
he could decompress.
He just could be picky, yeah. And there's nothing to say he would be interested in this, but we're playing hypothetical stuff here, John. And I'm going to agree with your assessment. Good hire. I would flip it. I would say I would put Herman above Malzahn. I think you could make an argument either way. You know, I do get a little concerned, I guess, about Malzahn trending down the last couple of years. But still, I mean, it was, you know, he's got a lot of 8, 9, 10 win seasons on his resume. He's got that 3-win showing against Nick Saban. And so I think good hire. Moving on to the next one, I'm going to move two guys. I'm going to have you choose between these two because I kind of view them similarly. They're group of five coaches. They're young, up-and-coming coaches. Who would you rather have, Jamie Chadwell, Coastal Carolina, or Billy Napier, Louisiana?
Wow, that's a tough one. With Billy Napier, he's kind of a mystery guy. People think he's turning down all these jobs. I'm not sure he's being offered these jobs. I don't know what to think of Billy Napier. In terms of Chadwell, he's been a head coach quite a while at lower-level programs. So he knows what it's like to run a program, albeit in a lesser situation. But really, as a coach, it's one great year. That's a really tough one. Do I have to answer it, or can I just say, I don't know?
Oh, you have to answer, yes.
Which one of those guys I would pick? I think I might take Billy Napier.
Okay, yeah. I'm in agreement. And for the reason you said, I like the fact that Chadwell has run his own program for a really long time. A lot of that was at the FCS level. But, I don't know. Both these guys feel a little bit of a wild card. You're kind of high ceiling maybe, but possibly could go disastrous too. But I maybe give Napier the edge because he's got so much assistant coaching experience at the Power 5 level in addition to the head coaching experience. He's had back-to-back really good years at Louisiana, where, as you said, Chadwell's had the one incredible year at Coastal Carolina, but it's a program on the rise, and I might feel a little more comfortable maybe if you saw him do it for another season. And so I'd give a slight edge to Napier. I think I like that that Power 5 extensive assistant coach and coordinator. He was a coordinator at Arizona State, was an assistant under Saban, which I know normally means you can't beat Saban, but still, he's got.
Well, I know that you weigh that assistant coaching experience in Power 5 very heavily. That's come up in the past when you've been analyzing coaches hires. So I appreciate your consistency. Hypothetical. We don't see much difference, I don't think, between Tom Herman and Gus Malzahn. One of us might favor one a little more than the other. Let's say we give them an 80, okay?
Is this like out of 100, we scoring a test here?
Yeah, that's good. We give them an 80. What then would you give Jamie Chadwell and Billy Napier?
I'd say 65 to 70. You want a number? 67.
Okay, I was going to say in the 60s, so we're in agreement on that. So what we're saying, there's a big drop-off from Herman Malzahn if you go down to the next guys. Is there anybody in between?
I don't know if there's anybody in between. And Luke Fickell, I guess, would be either in between or right there with Herman and Malzahn. I didn't want to spend too much time on Luke Fickell because I think it's far-fetched he would wind up at Tennessee. I don't see that happening. But I think he would be in that category above a Chadwell or a Napier because I think there's a little bit more on the resume there. I mean, Fickell, to me, goes into that category probably with Herman and Malzahn.
You don't think Fickell would want the Tennessee job?
I don't, no. So we're going to move on to a different set of candidates, John. I'm going to wrap this up. We might revisit this another time because there's plenty to chew on here. But I'm going to speed through some other names here, and these names may or may not be on a hot board that I might be working on, just in case. Some of them are, some of them might not be. But they're names I want you to consider, and I want you to tell me who you like best out of this group and who you like least. Okay, so it's going to be rapid fire here. You can write these down if you want. I know our producer would not like that, but
she's
somehow
not
remember
like
these.
That.
I know,
got
John.
A steel trap.
Well, just remember them. You're a pretty bright mind, not quite as bright as mine, but still fairly sharp. Okay, Tony Elliott, Clemson offensive coordinator. Brent Venables, Clemson defensive coordinator. Bill Clark, head coach at UAB. Josh Heupel, head coach at UCF. Scott Satterfield, head coach at Louisville. Bill O'Brien, former head coach of the Houston Texans, Penn State, former general manager of the Houston Texans, recently fired. Of that group, who do you like most? Who do you like least? You need me to run through them real quick again?
Scott Satterfield I like the most.
You like Satterfield the most? Interesting. Okay. You're not worried about that bad season this year? Just chalk it up to a pandemic year or something?
I just don't like any of those guys a lot.
Okay.
For different reasons.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just... And I really didn't, I'd forgotten how bad Louisville's season was. But
he did have a really good run at Appalachian State. You know, people think about Missouri hiring Eli or Elijah Drinkwitz, however you call him, as we've discussed before on this podcast, after one season there at Appalachian State. But it was Scott Satterfield that was had really Appalachian State was rolling under him. He went 51-24 in 5 seasons at Appalachian State. And then Drinkwitz took it over for a year before getting hired at Missouri. Satterfield 8-5 in year one at Louisville, went 4-7 in year two, was linked to the South Carolina job. It didn't wind up happening, but until this year was certainly seen as a coach on the rise. So, okay, you're going with Satterfield of that group. I'm going to say, well, this feels like a wild card, but I will say I like Bill O'Brien the most out of that list. You know, a guy with extensive experience in the NFL, but also had those couple seasons as head coach of Penn State. And, you know, people like to talk about what a mess you'd have stepping in at Tennessee. I don't know how big of a mess it is or isn't. You'd be stepping into a program under an internal and now external investigation, but still that compares not at all. It's not anywhere close to the situation, the mess that Bill O'Brien stepped into, completely different circumstances there at Penn State, and did, considering the circumstances, did, I think, a very admirable job there. So I would say I'd take maybe O'Brien out of that batch.
I think Bill O'Brien's arrogant.
Here we go again.
Well, I know. I mean, that's just the first thing that comes to mind. I shouldn't hold that against him. And I would probably have him as my second pick.
Okay. So maybe I'm number one, if not for his arrogance.
Yeah, he worked. And I shouldn't even count that. You know, maybe I should take Bill O'Brien. I just don't know. The guys from the Northeast, I don't think he would be a good fit for Tennessee. I don't know. Who was Joe Moorhead, the Penn State offensive coordinator that took the Mississippi State job? His resume is not nearly as glowing as O'Brien, but I thought he was a really bad fit at Mississippi State. I thought that before he was fired, when he was hired.
How about then someone from the region, someone from the South, just about 2.5 hours down the road? Oh, no, Tennessee's already got that. And Jeremy Pruitt. Never mind. They already tried that.
Well, I'm okay. I mean, I don't like that group you threw out there. So, you know, just to agree with something for change, I think I'll go with Bill O'Brien, too. So you can feel like you swayed me with your intellect. Well, let's talk about the worst guys on that. The last guy I would want on that list would be Brett Venable at Clemson.
Well, this is getting boring because I agree again, John. I think he's been a great coordinator, but it feels like Tennessee would be repeating the hire it just made. Now, that's not to say it couldn't work, but yeah, it would really feel like a repeat of the Jeremy Pruitt hire in 2017, and you don't want to watch that movie again.
No, he's one of those guys that I look at him and say, he needs to stay a defensive coordinator forever.
And maybe he knows that. He's a name that's on hot boards every year for head coaching opportunities, and here he is as one of the best coordinators in the land, one of the highest paid coordinators in the land, ultimate job security. Maybe we're talking about bright guys. Maybe he's the brightest guy among all these coaches, and I'll even put myself in that list, John, since you think I'm so bright. I'll even say maybe Brent Venables is brighter than I am for saying, I'm really good at the job I have. I'm just going to stay here.
No, he's not as bright as you are. I wonder about his defensive expertise. Mentioned that Gus Malzahn maybe was a little on the decline offensively. Well, look at these last two games with championships on the line. Did they even come close to slowing down Ohio State?
That's an offensive game now, John. It's an offensive game. So get a free pass as a defensive coordinator.
Okay. So it doesn't matter how many points. What did he give up? Was it 56 or something? It seemed like that. What about against LSU in the national championship game in 2009, the 19th season?
He's going against the Heisman Trophy winner. He's not going to do that every week.
Oh, okay. I got you. So as long as he's playing mediocre offense with superior defensive talent, he's a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, which is the best avenue to becoming a great coordinator. go up against mediocre competition.
Look at Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, look at how he shut down some offenses. I don't think Vanderbilt made a much of a dent in Alabama's defense when Jeremy Pruitt was running the show. Did it?
No. I don't think so. We're in agreement here, John. We're both cool. Passing on Brent Venables.
Do you have any more people, or is it? I mean, the list is getting kind of lame.
I feel like we need to. Yeah, I got some other names that kind of dropped off the list, so we won't even give them any airspace. But remember, you can give our podcast a positive review that helps keep John and I doing this podcast. And I know you want to hear more of us, don't want us going away. So please consider giving us a good review. And if you want to sponsor this, reach out. We'd be love to have you. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.